Okay, so good afternoon. Earlier today I visited Gracefield School in Lower Hutt with Communications and Information Technology Minister Amy Adams. This was to announce that a further 693 schools with around 230,000 students across New Zealand, including Gracefield School, will have access to ultra-fast broadband by the 30th of June next year. This includes schools in Invercargill, Gisborne, Dunedin, Whakatane, Nelson, Wellington, Greymouth, Timaru, Auckland and many other areas. Just over 500 schools will be connected by Chorus, one of the Crown's four partners for the ultra-fast broadband rollout. The other 191 schools will be connected by Chorus under the Rural Broadband Initiative. Today's announcement is in addition to the 221 schools with nearly 100,000 students that the government announced in October last year would have ultra-fast broadband fibre built past their gate by July of this year. It also follows the announcement last April that Chorus would build fibre to 521 rural schools under the Rural Broadband Initiative before the 30th of June next year. Last Friday, we also announced that Enable, one of the Crown's other partners for the ultra-fast broadband rollout, would be connecting another 11 schools in Christchurch by July this year, bringing the total number of Christchurch schools with access to ultra-fast broadband to 71. This means that more than 1,500 schools and more than half of all New Zealand school students, or more than 410,000 children, will be able to connect to ultra-fast broadband by July of next year. And I think you'll agree that's a fantastic result. Today's announcement is part of the National-led government's $1.5 billion commitment to nationwide ultra-fast broadband with speeds over 100 megabytes per second. Building a more competitive and productive economy is one of the National-led government's four key priorities for our second term, and the rollout of ultra-fast broadband is a significant component of this. The rollout of ultra-fast broadband enabling fibre to schools is making great progress. We are on track to achieving our objective of reaching all urban schools and 99.9% of school students by 2015. The 60 remaining remote schools will also be connected by wireless or satellite by 2015. No schools in New Zealand will miss out. Ultra-fast broadband will transform New Zealand's education system, making it one of the most wired in the world. This technology means that students anywhere in New Zealand can have access to the best teachers and online resources globally. In terms of the mixed ownership model, as you will have seen, the State-owned Enterprises Minister has announced that legislation supporting the mixed ownership model will be introduced later today. The legislation is pretty straightforward and reflects what we've been saying about mixed ownership for quite some time. Mixed ownership will free up between $5 and $7 billion for the government to invest in priority public assets like modern schools and hospitals without having to take on more debt to do so. So that means $5 to $7 billion less that we would have to borrow at any time when the world is more and more focused on government debt, and we think as a government that's important. We're seeing the types of problems European countries are suffering because of the debt trap their economies are strangled by. That is a situation New Zealand needs to avoid if we're to grow our economy and create better, higher paying jobs. Legislation being introduced today replicates Section 9 of the State-owned Enterprises Act regarding the Crown's controlling stakes in the companies captured by the mixed ownership model. As I've said before, the government is totally committed to meeting its ongoing treaty obligations. Following a series of hui around the country and over 200 submissions, we've taken on board the views expressed regarding the retention of Section 9. Legislation also requires the Crown to hold at least 51% of all voting shareholding in each of the energy companies, and restricts our shareholders from holding more than 10% of the voting stock. Air New Zealand is not included in the legislation at this stage. Before making decisions about the airline, the government is seeking further commercial advice on implementing its policy, which recognises there is a greater complexity around the company's existing shareholders' structure. But the government has made it clear it will retain at least 51% of Air New Zealand. Following our own commemorations last month for the first anniversary of the 2011 Canterbury earthquake, I'd like to remember those in Japan who will be observing the one-year anniversary of the Great East Japan earthquake on March the 11th. The quake was the most powerful to hit Japan, triggering a devastating tsunami. and causing 16,000 people to lose their lives. A further 5,000 are still missing. A year on, Japan's determination to rebuild and recover is something we in New Zealand can take heart from. I've written to my counterpart, Prime Minister Noda, to express on behalf of New Zealanders our thanks for Japan's unhesitating help during Canterbury's time of need, and our sympathy as the people of Japan rebuild their lives and their communities. I'd like to note that this year, Japan and New Zealand celebrate 60 years of diplomatic relations. The fact that both countries went so swiftly to one another's aid in the aftermath of earthquakes underscores the depth and closeness of these historic ties. Just in terms of the House, you'll be aware of since session this week, we're progressing a number of committee stages on the order paper. We also have the first reading of the mixed ownership model bill on Thursday. We've extended 7 hours on Thursday and Friday, and progressing a number of treaty settlement bills, including 4 committee stages and 5 first readings. In terms of activity, I'll be in the House and obviously caucus tomorrow and Wednesday. I'll be in Wellington as well. On Thursday, I'm in Tauranga before going to Auckland for the launch of Women's Entrepreneurs Week. On Friday, I'm in Wanaka. On Saturday, I'm at Pacifica. At Sunday, I'm at the QMU show and a few other bits and pieces of my lecture.
Prime Minister, what reports have you had on the actions of the New Zealand consul to Cairo in the Algerian kidnapping case?
I've certainly had reports that the ministry is working hard to help the family involved. You'll be aware it's a very complex child custody dispute, and we're doing our very, very best to give support and to give help.
And what about the report that she's actually confronted the kidnappers over there?
I think they've been doing good work to try and support that family in need. My understanding is that everything they've done has been in adherence to the law, and obviously, you know, we've been very careful in that regard. But it's important we provide support for New Zealanders when they need it.
There are reports that the woman, the consul, is losing her job, has been disestablished, and is going to have to reapply. Have you sought any details
about that? Well, look, I think Mr. Chair is making those claims as ahead of himself. We're going through a consultation phase at this point. We at NFAD are looking at the structure of jobs in their overseas embassies and high commissions, but no final decisions have been made yet, and there'll be, I'm sure, quite a series of discussions that will take place once that consultation comes to
place. Is this a good example of this woman's being as heroic as discussed? Is this a good example of just how useful diplomats can be?
Well, I don't think there's any doubt that our Foreign Service provides a great role and supports New Zealanders in their moments of need. But what is also true is that we need to modernise the Foreign Service. And there's a number of ways that we're looking at doing that. I think most people are in agreement. Maybe some discussions over what is the right levers to pull, if you like, and what are the right steps to take. But in terms of modernising the service, I think that's important.
What about motivation would they be? Would you be confident that, say, some locally employed agent, perhaps one who sort of like is more in sympathy with the local cultural system, might act in the same way and act in the same way?
Well, again, I think you're ahead of yourself in terms of what actually might happen. I mean, there's no suggestion that whatever the circumstances are, that this person wouldn't get the support that in the way that they have. We'll continue to have support on the ground in Egypt. The person's being serviced by our embassy in Cairo. As you're aware, one of the suggestions is that there'll be an 0800 number. The purpose of that number is to be able to direct the nearest point of support. It's not to say that is the support, it's simply as a mechanism for directing support. And it'd be my expectation that whatever happens, and the same decisions haven't been made yet, that a person finding themselves in this position would still continue to get support by New Zealand.
So you're, in a sense, saying that Ms. Pereri would get the same level of support after the reforms that she is getting now?
That's my expectation.
How could you guarantee that it will be by New Zealand, though, the suggestion is that there might be, you know, companies would tender for that sort of local on the ground?
Well, they'll be certainly representing New Zealand, so whether a New Zealand citizen or not isn't the relevant point. The relevant point is whether they're acting for New Zealand and in New Zealand's best interest.
Do you think those proposals, those restructuring proposals announced recently, the impact went too far?
Look, I don't want to get ahead of that yet because they're going through the consultation process. It is a genuine consultation process. It'd be my expectation that there'll be some give and take on that. I'm not sure everything will be implemented, but I think it's a good starting point in terms of what's required to give both progression to people in the ministry, which has been one of the issues, to make sure that we're resourced in the right places and that we're efficient. But let's sort of see what happens at the end of that consultation period.
Do you think government, or has government been surprised at the reaction of staff to those proposals, by the strength of the reaction?
Well, I haven't spoken to John Allen about that yet, or the State Services Commissioner, and I haven't seen any of the submissions. I've certainly obviously know a number of MFAT staff, and informally they've given me views on what they think is the right steps. You know, people are passionate about that organisation, so we appreciate that. But also, you know, I think that there is a recognition that there needs to be change and modernisation. So it's a matter of, you know, finding that balance. And we'll work our way through it. It's a genuine consultation process, and I'm sure not all of the recommendations will be adopted.
What's your understanding of the legal position on this particular case? Is there a grounds for negotiation between Algeria and New Zealand on child custody issues?
I can't give you an exact answer at that moment. What I've been advised is that the New Zealand representative has acted totally in accordance with local laws at all times. But in terms of extradition, if that was the case of the children out of Algeria, that's a much more complex position.
Is there a dispute resolution framework between New Zealand and Algeria?
I can't give you an answer at that moment.
Are the reports correct that this diplomat just sat on the floor and said, I'm not leaving without my citizens? Is that the...
Well, I haven't been formally advised of that, so I don't know. I don't know if I've written in the paper, but I can't tell you if it's accurate or not. I just know that there's been ongoing engagement for quite a period of time, and they've been doing the best.
Prime Minister, on the partial privatisation project, it's been suggested by a political columnist with reasonable connections to a high level in the party that one of the main, one of the central reasons for the programme is to allow these companies to sell their know-how overseas.
Yep.
Is that the case? And if so, what is preventing them from doing that already, given the Iridium to pretty well Southern Hydro not that long ago?
Well, certainly one of the reasons is that we think these companies can actually expand their activities overseas. And the thing that's stopping them at the moment is we're a fundamentally capital-strapped government. So we have some resources to put in if they want to go and expand their activities, like micro and power and use their geothermal technology overseas. But we wouldn't necessarily want to fund all of that. And we think that the rigour that both listing on the stock exchange, external analysis and private sector shareholders brings to the party would give a greater robustness about any offshore expansion that might occur.
Yeah, I believe formation of subsidiaries along the lines of what was suggested, for example, by Trevor Mallard in the last government, would be able to achieve that.
Well, that's always an option, and you could theoretically do it in that way. So the parent company could own subsidiary companies which had a different capital structure. But overall, we like the mixed ownership model for all the reasons that we've outlined, and it's not just the release of capital and the ability to use that for other investments. It's really about beefing out the stock exchange. It's about giving greater investment opportunities for New Zealanders. And I mean, as I've said on numerous occasions, it defies belief to think that New Zealanders would be happy that their retirement savings are currently in things like the New Zealand Super Fund should only be invested in Australian energy companies and not invested in New Zealand energy companies, with the exception of Contact. And I think that you would want to see that. I think New Zealanders would want to see their KiwiSaver holdings going into New Zealand, iconic New Zealand companies.
Does government have a clear, do you have a clear in your own mind exactly how this front end will work? Because I think a lot of people still don't really understand
how
New Zealand is being at the front of the queue for shares. I mean, I haven't seen the legislation yet, but yeah. I presume that
Yeah, so it's not, it wouldn't be required to be in legislation, because that's really the amendment of the SOE Act, moving these companies into the appendix of the Public Finance Act. But yes, the government is working with our financial advisors, the companies are the lead agencies and the investment banks, on making sure we prioritise New Zealanders. I mean, one of the things that we'll have to come up with relatively quickly is what's the minimum parcel of shares that we're prepared to sell to mum and dad, what would be the scaling of that. But hypothetically, you pick a number that's quite achievable for a lot of New Zealanders. You can certainly give them a commitment that they wouldn't be scaled. may well say that they are subject to other incentives, loyalty bonuses and things. So there's lots of things you could do around those individual retail investors. Then on top of that, of course, you've got, you know, New Zealand domestic institutions and obviously KiwiSaver accounts, those sorts of things, even in that other category.
So you would never envisage having something in the legislation that would have
No, you don't need it in the legislation. You need to practically have it, because it's essentially the application of the policy, and New Zealanders will judge us on how well we execute that policy, but it's not necessary to have it in the legislation.
So you're still considering bonuses or loyalty schemes? They're still in the mix?
We haven't ruled anything out yet. I mean, obviously it depends on, you know, on the shareholders and what we think is, you know, appropriate or not. Again, we're getting advice from the Treasury and from the investment bankers on those and other tools that are available.
And have you had discussions on the size of the parcels?
Kevin hasn't yet.
Have you seen anything?
I haven't seen anything yet, but I'll figure in my mind, but we'll see how it goes.
What's that bigger?
When is that mechanism due to be announced? Our Treasury had earlier indicated that we were likely to see it this month.
Yeah, I don't know exactly when it will come out. I haven't seen anything from Treasury either. Minister of Finance hasn't mentioned anything to me yet. But they would not.
Any discussions on the second company to be floated?
Not yet.
Because there was between Mighty River and Genesis to be the first one.
Yeah.
So should we assume?
Well, the issue was with Meridian is it's got a new chief executive, so there's some thought whether that should be slightly later, but yeah, the options are limited. Leave the Genesis and Meridian.
So it looks now as if Air New Zealand will be last.
I don't think you can guarantee by saying that. Solid Energy's got some issues we need to work through as well, so we'll just see how that goes.
What's your reaction to the vandalism of the wharves in Libya?
It's potentially very distressing, well, certainly very distressing anyway. It's potentially distressing from a New Zealand perspective. I'm advised that there may be up to 11 New Zealand graves in Benghazi. They're administered by the War Graves Commission, and obviously if there's any damage, we want to see those graves restored, but it's kind of shameful act of violence.
When will you know if there's any damage to the graves?
They are going to report back to us very soon. I think they're in the process of, they've got to go and actually visit the site, I guess, and identify exactly which graves have been desecrated and which ones haven't.
What do you think of that Helen Clark has chosen to hold a presentation here in the
Kiwi
this evening?
From one Prime Minister to another. I'm very relaxed about it. It's fine. She wants to use it. She knows the territory well.
Which is being nostalgic.
Oh, yeah, no.
Have you said that you feel
comfortable
to speak?
I'm advised by my people today that they've got a date, and it's very soon.
Next week?
Could be, yes.
The government is making...
Getting closer. Apparently they were beavering away in the weekend.
The government's making some changes around immigration categories, employment, adults, child, adult, sibling, and parent categories to be introduced July this year. The immigration minister has indicated that the sponsorship level to cover those applicants will be in the vicinity of $30,000. Does that not disadvantage Pacific immigrants to New Zealand to come up with that sort of sum of money?
Well, I think the first point I'd make is it's true that the Cabinet has had discussions and in principle signed off on changes to the immigration policy in relation to migrants coming to New Zealand. And what's also true is that we see migration as a good way of supplementing both skills and capital to help grow the economy. What hasn't happened is that policy hasn't begun to be implemented yet, because there are a number of governments that we need to have discussions with. But for the most part, we're comfortable that we've got the balance about right to ensure that those that come to New Zealand can be relatively self-sufficient, unless they're coming on the basis of a refugee status, where obviously the government provides complete wraparound support. So it's about getting that balance right.
But you would expect, on the basis of that sponsorship level, to have fewer Pacific Islanders coming in on that category?
There's complications with different countries, so I wouldn't draw that conclusion just yet, but that's part of the discussions we know we're having with a number of governments.
Can I just go back to the partial asset question and getting in the front of the queue? Can you give us an idea, because I think Minister Ryle today said the third quarter has been Mighty River's
confirmed. Yeah.
Are we going right up to the line in terms of telling us when that front of the queue thing is going to be, how that's going to work?
Well, it's not a matter of going right up line, but if we argue it's third quarter in terms of when the first of the mixed ownership model companies can be floated, then obviously we need to, we've got plenty of time in one sense. The second thing is that we just need to work through that advice and to be aware that Bill's likely to be with the select committee for around about 4 months, maybe a little bit less if it's continued, but in that sort of order of magnitude. So there's quite a bit of time, and the Treasury's been working on that just simply hasn't presented a paper yet. Minister of Finance may have had a bit of early advice, but he hasn't even spoken to me about it.
And how much sensitivity is there around the effect on price? You know, like, so how much does that play into it? And as we know, famously, the Minister referred to it being a best guess or best estimate.
Yeah.
So how much is that playing into the questions around price?
Well, what's clear is the government's, while it's trying to get a good return and trying to get a fair price for these assets, it's not maximising its absolute return, because if it was doing that, it would 100% sell the companies. By retaining majority control, effectively, and keeping the whip hand, that does have some impact on depressing the price. And so that's just a cost that we pay for maintaining majority control of these companies. But, you know, like over time, you know, obviously we're going to work to get the best price we can within that framework.
And you're dropping the corporate responsibility clauses from the SOE Act in this new legislation. I mean, is there any even much point in these clauses? Do you think they have much effect?
Well, effectively, the NZ Stock Exchange has its own rules around corporate responsibilities. That's the first thing. Secondly, you know, we're going to be the majority shareholders, so our expectations are going to continue to be high that we would expect these companies to operate well. And if you think about a company like Air New Zealand, I mean, no one would argue they're anything other than a sort of model corporate citizen. I mean, look at what they did around the Christchurch earthquakes, and yet they're not subject to a corporate responsibility clause as was defined under the SOE Act. So, look, I'm very comfortable that those companies will operate as good corporate citizens and do the right thing.
We're moving that corporate responsibility clause across in a similar way to Section 9, would that have affected the return, the price you got, do you think?
I don't think so, overly. But it was just, what we're trying to do is replicate a situation where, for the most part, those companies look like a normally listed company on the New Zealand Stock Exchange, and notwithstanding that we're the largest shareholder in those companies.
And they wouldn't have had they had that clause in, because presumably shareholders would be concerned that the government could intervene and force the SOE to behave other than commercially?
Well, I don't know whether it would have been read that way. It's just that they don't have it at the moment. I mean, what is true is a company listed on NZX, you know, signs up to a series of rules, and one of them is that they're good corporate citizens. But there's no point in us duplicating and doing different things. I mean, the idea is to make these companies look like normal companies that are listed on the exchange. They just happen to be companies where the majority and largest shareholder is the New Zealand government.
What are the particular issues that Solid Energy needs to work through?
I'm just not in a position to want to run through those today.
Is part of the one?
No, not necessarily.
Is there any possibility of splitting off those Lignite ideas and disclosing that how the company would just act at operation?
No, I wouldn't want to draw any conclusions today.
Is there any uncertainty around the safety of their line operations?
No.
Somebody might have
to. No.
There's a person now.
No. We played too many questions, but we don't have much time.
You have a 10% ceiling. Just for reassurance, is that in perpetuity? Like, is there anything to stop the 10% shareholder on selling to somebody who has 10%, or will everyone be always limited to 10%?
Yes, the latter, they'll be limited to 10%. So, that's
so they'll have to sell to very small shareholders if they want to sell their
Yeah, although, I mean, if you take someone like Air New Zealand, for instance, we own roughly 75% of the company. The next biggest shareholder at the moment owns 3%. So you don't necessarily get really big holdings. You may get people who want to bump up towards 10%. That's quite a lot for some of these companies. Okay, thanks much.